we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Glad to be with you here on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm going to be with you throughout the week. So thanks so much for listening and acting on what you hear. You know, that's the thing about all of this, culture war requires action. John Hancock said, I urge you by all that's dear, by all that's honorable, by all that's sacred, not only to pray, but to act. And that's the guy that's president of the Continental Congress when we do the Declaration of Independence, which we'll be celebrating, of course, next week. But the point is, listen, absolutely, we need to be spending time on our knees, thanking God for what we've got, begging for his mercy and to lift his judgment that is obviously happening all across this country. But at the same time, we have to get up and then go outside and be salt and light, actually live this stuff out. So it's vital that we're people of action. So thank you for listening, but also get out there and take action. And, you know, I think more people are taking action than ever before, and attitudes are starting to change because of that. Now, partly because there's been so much just crazy stuff come out of the left that it's pushed people into waking up. In other words, they see such insanity, like people were willing to put up with, you know, hey, we just want to be able to love whoever we want to love. Like, that was an easy sell, right? But now you've got this whole radical, literally carving up kids, taking 13-year-olds and doing things that should not be done. And it's just been too much for those people that were in the middle, didn't want to have to deal with this, didn't want to have to pay attention to it. And it's changing attitudes. Headline out of, let's see, who was it that did this poll? It's the Public Religion Research Institute poll. And they do this every year, and what they have found is that actually you have 65% of Americans that say they believe there's only two genders. Now, I know if I say that out of context, it's like, what in the world's wrong with the other? You tell me a third of the country thinks that there's more than one than two genders? There's a third of the country, 35%, actually believe that you can become something other than male or female or change those. Anyway, that's the bad part. The good news is that you've got 90% of Republicans saying there's only two genders, and that's an increase from 87% in 2021. Democrats, believe it or not, 44% believe there are only two genders, up from 38%, so 6% more Democrats. And putting that in a relative ratio, I mean, that's a significant increase. That's a, what is that, almost a 20%, not quite a 20%. That'd be closer to about 16% increase. So that's, folks, that's good news. That's good news. Two-thirds of independents. So that's 66% in 2023 versus 60% in 2021 that say there are only two genders. What's my point is that the trends are going the right direction. We just had the Gallup poll. I think I talked about it yesterday. That says that that now it's less. It's down 7% in terms of even approval for the LGBTQ lifestyle. So down from 70% to 63%, which the mantra for, you know, as I mentioned before, my you know, formative years in the 80s and 90s was love, 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 and accept everything, tolerance, all that stuff. And, you know, that's just gotten worse and worse and worse over the years. Now, all of a sudden, approval of that stuff is going down, and actual belief in biology, can't believe we have to even say it that way, but belief in basic biology is going up. So those are really, really good trends, folks. I can't emphasize enough with all of the onslaught to go the other direction. I mean, every major media outlet, every government institution, every major entertainment outlet and industry. I mean, all of them, with all of the movies and everything pushing this stuff and sometimes in subtle ways and sometimes just in your face. So with all of that cultural pressure and that cultural influence, I mean, literally shaping the minds of the youth, all of our education systems, shaping the minds of the youth, shaping the values that you typically get when you watch movies and listen to music and all that. All of that has been pushing the other direction, pushing for complete acceptance and celebration and participation in the radical LGBTQ agenda. And I just think that's incredible that even with all of that, the trend is finally going the other way, at least in this snapshot of where we are. So this is very, very good news. I think in no small part to American Family Association and the voice of truth that AFA has been for decades, but also just in terms of providing good news, good commentary, good information on a daily basis, responding to all of these efforts out there and responding, obviously, 100 other issues as well. But, I mean, just constantly having a voice of truth that you can go to. That's why American Family Radio is so, so important. So thank you to everybody out there that supports financially and just emotionally and in prayer and in sharing the program. But also in terms of just providing not only the daily stuff, just immediate response kind of thing, but providing good materials to really dive deep into some of these issues and also to minister to those who have been hurt by this stuff, who have been led astray. I mean, that's, I think, the most powerful stories we're hearing right now are these kids in their 20s that are detransitioning, that are saying, I cannot believe you did this to me when I was 13 years old. And they're even now suing hospitals and suing doctors that did that to them when they were kids. But their stories are so powerful, you know, especially the ones that have found not only that, you know, they needed to reverse this insanity and they have found sanity, but also the ones that have found faith and that have found Christ. I mean, those stories, I think, are what are helping to turn the tide. And so giving good resources to people that have been hurt by this stuff is another thing that American Family does. And the Cultural Institute here at American Family Association, so important, the different materials that constantly are being put out. And so this month, during this month-long effort to distort the rainbow and somehow celebrate one of the seven deadly sins, which is, of course, pride, even more important time for us to talk about some of those materials available from the Cultural Institute. One of those, Practical Ways to Minister to the Sexually Broken. You can get this at our websites, streaming.afa.net or at resources.afa.net if you prefer to get the DVD. So you can stream it by going to streaming.afa.net, or if you prefer to have a DVD, you know, that can sit on your shelf and never be used. No, I'm kidding. There's some people that still use DVD players out there. I haven't used one in a while, but I still do my Constitution class on DVDs because there's still a lot of people out there that like DVDs. So if that's you, resources.afa.net. But there's another one, The Theological Error of Gay Christianity. This is critical to share and teach, folks, because, oh, the woke church, the progressive church that is actually teaching anti-biblical positions, basically saying, ignore biblical teaching, live however you want, whatever feels good, and you're still a good Christian. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they back that up biblically. And that's why this series is, or this DVD is also very important. The Theological Error of Gay Christianity. Stephen Black and M.D. Perkins on that one. The other one, Stephen Black and Laura Lee Stanlake on Practical Ways to Minister to the Sexually Broken. Okay, both of those available to you right now at streaming.afa.net or at resources.afa.net. So I think that's part of the solution, right? It's because of tools like that and truth being spoken like that. You know, I think a lot of the churches didn't want to deal with this, man. They didn't want to talk about it. Pastors don't want to talk about it. They're not only worried about being divisive, quote unquote, they're worried about hurting somebody's feelings. You know, I hear it all the time. People say, well, yeah, but my niece or my nephew or my uncle or whatever is in that lifestyle, so I don't want to hurt their feelings. Really? Man, if I don't hurt your feelings, I'm not doing my job. If I don't step on your toes, I should be stomping on them. I mean, truth hurts. Come on, people. Truth hurts. I need conviction. I want a pastor. I want a friend. I want a brother in Christ. I want a wife, my own kids, that are willing to speak truth to me when I am going down a bad path that's going to harm me, that's sinful, that's wrong. I want them to absolutely hurt my feelings. I want them to speak truth into my life so that I can be convicted, be offended, have my feelings hurt, and then that shame that comes from being in sin, as the great Jonas Blaine said in the TV series The Unit. I know no one on this listening right now probably even knows that show, but There was a great line in one of those episodes where he said, "Shame is the pathway to grace." Now, this is a completely secular show. He wasn't talking about biblical concepts, although, well, it is a biblical concept. In other words, shame meaning you're convicted, not shame like you got to live and, you know, you got to live with this shame of things you've done in the past. No, that's the beauty of the gospel. That's the beauty of the shame bringing you to grace. And then because of that grace, those sins are washed away and you don't have to dwell on them and you're not judged by them anymore and you no longer have to be, you know, walk around with your head hung in shame or any of that. It's gone. It's gone. But how did it start? How did you get to the cleanliness? How did you get to the new life? How did you get to the joy of your salvation? There had to be conviction in the first place. So your feelings had to be hurt. you had to be offended. Everybody's so worried about being offended. No, that's a good thing. It's a good thing. The truth is offensive. And so I think having these tools, having pastors willing to speak to these things, we as just good biblical citizens and good family members and people that care about the people in our life, we have to be willing to speak to these things. And when we do, the culture changes. The culture does better. The meat, instead of spoiling, the salt brings out the best flavor. So those are, I hope for you, a way to start today. Two pieces of good news. And some people don't care about polling. You know, like every time David Barton or myself or whoever else starts dragging out all these polls and talking about the data, I sometimes see people's eyes roll and they're like, you know, I don't care about the polls. That doesn't mean anything to me, or they don't understand them, or whatever it is. I think they're important. I think you need those snapshots. It's just a moment in time, but you need those snapshots just to see how we're doing, just to see what direction is the culture going. That's one reason I love George Barna, and we've had him on here on At the Core many times, and we'll continue to have him on, because he gets a pulse of what's happening out there, specifically in the church, but he does the whole culture. He does, you know, general polls as well, but I love how much he helps us know what's the church direction right now. Where's the church going? And you know, obviously different people within the church, and there's different, you know, sects, and there's different, you know, trends depending on what your pastor's teaching and the type of church you go to. But generally speaking, he's able to break it down and say, here's what people are focused on right now. Here's what they care about. Here's where their convictions are. You know, do they agree with a biblical perspective on sex? Do they believe in a biblical perspective on gender? Do they believe perspective on taxes, you know, or whatever the issue may be? I love that. I think that helps us to know where we need to be, you know, where we may be getting it wrong, and maybe we need to do better at explaining or teaching or exhorting or whatever it might be. And it's good for pastors to know these things. But for you in our audience at the Core, I think it's important for you to know what the trends are like, because, well, if the trends are going the wrong way, to get more involved, right? Not that we don't stay involved even if the trends are going the right way, but when you hear those polls like I just shared with you and how, you know, we're moving the right direction on even these tough issues of sexuality and gender, and they're only tough because sometimes we think it's tough to stand up to what's popular, but the fact that we're winning. Meaning in terms of policy or actual legislation or elections or anything yet, but we're winning, meaning the trend is now going the right direction. I think that's good news, and I hope it's an encouragement to you. I hope that it makes you recognize that we have the answers from God's Word, and when we apply them, everybody benefits, and they come with us. When we articulate these things well, when we talk about the harm and the pain that comes from doing things against the laws of nature and nature's God, and then we talk about all the benefits and the prosperity and I don't mean prosperity gospel, I'm talking about just basic laws of nature and nature's God stuff here, but the prosperity, the freedom, the joy, the all of those things that come from doing it God's way, by following God's law, by being in His will. When we talk about all of those benefits, people want to be a part of that. And when we live it and they see it in our lives, well, talk about preaching the gospel without using words. I mean, that's where it's at. And of course, I'm using lots of words because it's a radio program. All right, stay with me, folks. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get to your phones here in the next segment as well and get to some more of those headlines. Phone number 888-589-8840. I'm Rick Green. You're listening to At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Appreciate you joining me today. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. And, of course, we're always hitting the core issues of the day and what's going on in the headlines, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and then taking your phone calls regarding whatever the topic is for the day. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. And when I say whatever the topic is for the day, I should say whatever the topic is of the minute, because I never know where I'm going to go. Like, I just got all the headlines pulled up, headline jumps out at me, we go talk about it. Or if it's, you know, something that I was thinking about the day before, maybe I'm a little bit more prepared. But most of the time, I'm off the cuff, folks. Most of the time, it's just what's hot right now. What are people thinking about? What are they talking about? And what do we think about it? And what's the Bible say about it, most importantly? And then what does the Constitution say about it? So specifically thinking about the Constitution today, I ranted yesterday, got a little bit upset, honestly, with our United States Supreme Court for once again requiring racism, this time in Alabama and Louisiana with regard to congressional lines. Well, today they hand down a decision that is, I guess it was handed down today. It might have been a couple of days ago, but I'm just now seeing it. That is so unconstitutional. On its face, it is wrong. And it's just it's the same area of the Constitution, elections, and who decides. And please know, anytime you want to boil down an issue and really understand what's going on, it's a simple two-word question: who decides? That's what every piece of legislation, at the heart of it, you have to answer that question. Who decides? Is it giving power to government, power to individuals? If it's giving power to government, is it giving power to the federal government or the state government or local government? If it's giving power to individuals, is it giving power to a group or is it, those types of questions. Every law comes down to somebody being vested with power, with jurisdiction, with authority. Okay, so the Constitution of the United States, very clearly, I mean, you cannot get more crystal clear than this. I'm going to read two clauses to you. There should be zero confusion here, okay? This has to do with who has the power. Who decides how elections are going to take place in a state, all right? Here's the elections clause in Article 1. The times, places, and manner for holding elections for senators and representatives shall, not may or partly, no, shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. I don't see any wiggle room here, folks. There is no wiggle room here. Okay, now let's talk president. That's the House and Senate. The presidential, the electors clause in Article 2 says that each state gets to appoint those presidential electors, quote, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. There's no comma there according to how the Supreme Court feels this year. There's no parentheses as long as the Supreme Court is okay with this. There's no second sentence in each of these clauses that says, you know, everything we said beforehand about how elections will take place has to be approved by the U.S. Supreme Court, or Congress can change it with some, you know, voting rights sort of law that's passed. No, no. If you want to take power away, if you want to change who decides, if you want the answer to who decides how these elections will take place in each state, if you want to change the answer to who decides from the state legislature to the U.S. Congress or to the United States Supreme Court, fine, fine, you can do that. But you have to actually change the authority in the Constitution by a constitutional amendment. That's the only way to do it. You have to get either Congress, two-thirds of Congress, to propose that amendment and then get 38 states to ratify that amendment, or you have to get 34 states to propose having a convention to do that, and then at your convention of states, 26 states will have to say, we want this, and that proposal of those 26 states would then go back to all 50 state legislatures, and 38 of them would have to approve it just like if it had started in Congress. Okay, the whole point is you cannot change who has the power to determine how these elections will take place by just getting an opinion of the U.S. Supreme Court changing it. That is why I say it over and over and over again in our Constitution classes. We are not ruled by the Constitution. We are ruled by the Constitution. The Constitution says in Article 1, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. And then in Article 2, that each state shall have the power to appoint presidential electors, quote, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. If you want to change that, then get a constitutional amendment to change that. Because the Constitution saying, now in this new decision, Moore v. Harper, written by, of course, John Roberts, but unfortunately joined by Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. Remember, I've said it many times that these three Trump appointees were great on some things and terrible on other things. Now, Clarence Thomas, of course, and Sam Alito, of course, got it right. They always do. I mean, they've probably been wrong at some point. I just don't remember when it was or what it was about. Because they've been right 100% of the time for the last couple of years that has been so important when they've actually been able to cobble together a majority on many of these cases. In this case, they weren't. They were in the minority. So it's Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch got it right. So Gorsuch is, you know, I haven't figured out my exact percentage on these guys yet, but, you know, I'm kind of spitballing here. I'd say Thomas and Alito, 99.99% of the time right. Neil Gorsuch, 85. Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh, 85, maybe 80, probably. Yeah, Coney Barrett, maybe 75. The problem is that a lot of times they're not on the same 85, if that makes sense. In other words, that's why they have to cobble together a majority, because Alito and Thomas can typically get, you know, of the other four Republicans, quote unquote Republican appointees, I should say, they have to somehow get three of the four, and that's hard to do. I mean, Roberts, you never know. So anyway, enough dissertation on the makeup of the court. The whole point is that the court, once again in the election area, absolutely wrong. 100% an unconstitutional decision being handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court. They are out of their lane. They are making law instead of applying the Constitution. And I don't care if they blame it on Congress and the Voting Rights Acts. Congress does not have the right. Does not have the power in the Constitution to change the Constitution without state approval, with 38 states approving an amendment to the Constitution. You cannot, you should not, I shouldn't say you cannot because they're doing it right in front of our faces. You should not be able to amend the Constitution with a simple majority in Congress passing a law and then the U.S. Supreme Court saying, yeah, we like your law better than the Constitution. For whatever excuse they want to come up with for why they like their law better than the Constitution. I mean, you can say, listen, there's some states that are doing some really mean stuff right now. We don't like what they're doing. And if what they're doing is actually unconstitutional, then you don't need a federal law to say that that's unconstitutional. The Supreme Court could say what you're doing is unconstitutional and actually rule on it. But that's not what any of this is. All of this is an expansion of federal power without the permission of the people or the states, going beyond the 17 things that the Constitution says they can do. And in this case, one of the most important things that can be done is election law. And what they're saying here is that a state does not have the authority to determine how elections are going to take place in their states, even though the Constitution very crystal clearly says that's the way it's supposed to work. Because the founders would have never founded the country without that. These people understood at the founding of the country that each state, for true federalism, must be able to be unique and must be able to make their own laws in these areas, and that the federal government would only be, true federalism, would only be for making war, for patents and copyrights, protecting inventions, you know, for commerce across state lines, post offices and posters, the things they put in the Constitution. That's it. Do you think George Washington would have supported the Constitution as president of the Constitutional Convention if the document came out saying, guess what, folks? We've given the federal government these certain powers, and we've also given the federal government to rewrite your state laws for you, and we've given the federal government the power to give itself any new powers that it wants without the states having any approval of that. Are you kidding me? No way. George Washington says no to that. Gouverneur Moore says no to that. James Wilson says no to that. James Madison, none of them would have supported what we're doing right now living under the Constitution. It is absolutely against the Constitution what the Supreme Court just did. I just, I, I could rant about this all day long, folks, because it's at the core of who we are as a people. It's at the core of how this system works. We do not want a national government. We want a federal government that only does what the federal constitution says it can do, and the federal constitution can only be changed with the approval of the states. So you can't just create new stuff at the federal level and then slap each other on the back, you know, branch by branch, and say, meaning like, you know, the Congress does something and the president slaps them on the back and says, that's a great idea. Yeah, let's take that power from the states as well, because those people in Alabama and Louisiana, man, they're a bunch of racist rednecks. They don't know what they're doing. So we're gonna come in and make them be racist, make them vote for people based on the color of their skin. I mean, that's what they're doing with these laws. And then they pat each other on the back and they change our laws in our states without us ever giving them authority to do it. The answer to who decides should still be the states on these issues. The Constitution is clear about that. And if they get to decide at the federal level, it should only be because we tell them they get to decide, like we did with the Constitution and with 27 amendments. So we've amended the Constitution before to give new power to the federal government. That's, or to take power away. That's what the amendment process is all about. Okay. All right. What should you take from that rant? Number one, that the Supreme Court is not going to get it right just because of the three new justices Donald Trump put on the court. They're going to get it right sometimes and still wrong sometimes. Number two, that we should not be ruled by the Constitution. We must restore the Constitution, and that means restoring the states' power and ability to do their job under the Constitution in all of these areas, but specifically this area of overruling the federal government when it gets it wrong, like they did in this particular case. Let's go to the phones. Let's see who's up first here. Bobby, what do we got first? By the way, the phone number one more time, 888-589-8840.
Rick, you get Larry from Ohio.
All right, Larry from Ohio, you are up first, brother. Go ahead, man. What's your comment or question today?
Yeah, hi, Rick. Let's say there's in this 24 election, there's somebody that runs as an independent. So you've got three people and nobody gets to 270. Who wins the election?
Great question, man. And honestly, this is what should have happened in 2020. We should have had in 2020 a Congress that would look at those electors from the six states that sent two sets of electors, because they didn't know who won because of all the cheating that took place. And when I say cheating, I'm talking specifically about governors and state Supreme Courts and secretaries of state changing election law without the legislature. That very same clause that I just read to everybody was violated over and over and over again in those six states, where it says that the electors shall be chosen in such a manner as the legislature thereof may direct, not the Secretary of State, not the governor, not the state Supreme Court. And so those six states that changed the law like that, those electors should not have even been counted. And had they not been counted, then no one would have got the 270. And so there would have, at that point, been a little bit of a question, I guess a big question, as to the math, like does the denominator change as well, so that whatever the majority would be without those six states is now the winner, or do they still have to get to 270? And so without those six states, nobody gets to 270. And so then, depending on the answer to that question, it goes to the House, and they decide. The Congress would be the one to actually decide from. They would have to choose from the top two. Or in the case that you just described, let's say we did have three candidates running, very much it would be very similar to the John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson race, and I forget who the other candidates were, but that's exactly what happened with them. And so in their first race against each other, nobody got a majority. Now, Jackson had more. He was leading. He had the most electors, and so everybody thought that the Congress would choose him. And instead, they kind of thought he was a scoundrel, so they chose John Quincy Adams. And then Andrew Jackson spent 4 years saying, they stole the election from me. And so he basically ran for president again for those 4 years, and he won. So then he defeats John Quincy Adams in the rematch. But anyway, so that's the answer to your question. It goes to Congress if nobody gets a majority. But there is a question about what is a majority if you throw out certain electors, which you should be able to do, folks. By the way, can I just reiterate that now while we're on these topics? Absolutely, Congress has the authority to decide which electors should be counted or not counted. And yes, the vice president has the authority at that moment when they are opening those ballots. Thomas Jefferson did it in 1800. Richard Nixon did it in 1960. Unilaterally made the decision as to whether or not to accept or reject electors that were in question, that were being challenged. And so, anyway, the bottom line is state legislatures didn't do their job in 2020. In those six states, Republican legislators did not do their job. The Congress, Republicans in Congress, did not do their job. And yes, the Republican Vice President Mike Pence did not do his job. Now, he made a choice that was constitutional, but he had other choices that were also constitutional and would have saved us from this absolute destruction of our border, of our economy, of our Constitution, of our moral values, all of the damage that has been done so far in just the last two years and 5 months, let alone the damage that will still yet to be done in the next year and a half, could have been prevented if people in elected office had done their job. They had the constitutional means at their fingertips to save us from this nonsense, and they didn't do it. They didn't do it. It's Psalm 78, man. The Ephraimites, armed to the teeth, ran away from the battle. They had what they needed, and they ran away from the battle. It's exactly what happened in 2020. Let's not let it happen again. That means we have to be engaged, maybe even running for office, many of you out there listening. We have to be engaged, and we have to choose leaders with the biblical worldview and the backbone to live it out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with your phone calls, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. I'm Rick Green. You're listening to At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me today. We've been talking about the Supreme Court getting it wrong again on these election cases, especially this clear-cut who has the power, who decides on how elections will take place in your state. The Constitution very clearly, in two different places, as crystal clear as it could be, says the legislature thereof. In other words, the state legislature in your state makes those decisions, and the Supreme Court just got to say, no, we don't think so. No, we think Congress gets to decide this. We're going to shift power. We're going to amend the Constitution to completely change, literally like scratch out the word legislature and put United States Congress instead, like give the power to the feds instead of to the individual states. We're just going to do that on our own. You know, we don't need to go. It's so hard to amend the Constitution. I mean, you got to get 2/3 of Congress, or you got to get 2/3 of states, and then you got to get, you know, all this actual approval process from the states after the fact. I mean, that's a lot of work. I mean, we just need, you know, 5 lawyers in Washington, D.C., unelected, unaccountable lawyers in Washington, D.C. on the Supreme Court to agree. You know, so however we feel today, we think that it should be the feds, not the state. So we're going to, that is not how it's supposed to work, folks. That's a courtstitution, not a constitution. Okay, let's go back to the phones. By the way, phone number is 888-589-8840. Who we got next, Bobby?
We have a first-time caller to the Core. It's Norman from Mississippi.
Norman from Mississippi, first time calling in. Wait, what do you mean first time, Norman? Where you been, brother? No, I'm kidding, man. Thanks for calling in. Glad to have you.
I've been listening to you, man. Love
Good.
Your passion.
Thank you.
I think you may have, you may be looking at the intent of the Constitution wrong.
Hmm.
I would think that the Constitution would recognize the fact that all men are created equal by God. And Scripture does supersede the Constitution. What I'm thinking that you're missing here is that, for instance, for 300 years in this country, black people had no right to do anything, had no advantage at all, totally disadvantaged. And now, the way these lines are drawn, and the way the state, some of the states are doing these lines, it will keep black folks from ever having any power, authority in the state where they live.
Well, there is some truth to what you just said, but let me challenge you on a couple of pieces of it. All right, number one, there's no doubt that the Democrats have you know, throughout their history, done everything they could to be racist, and they've done everything they could to keep blacks from voting, to keep blacks from having rights, their Jim Crow laws, all the stuff that they did, evil stuff, wrong stuff, no doubt about it. Not quite 300 years, because in terms of for our country, those things happening. And being legal to happen was less than 100 years, and we actually beat the rest of the world in banning the slave trade and finally ending slavery and all those things. So no doubt for most of the founding in the founding era, for most of the states, what you're saying is true. Now, it's not that all blacks were treated that way, but some blacks were, and some blacks were actually the slave owners, not just the slaves themselves. So it's a mixed bag, but I hear what you're saying. And there's no doubt that the state should not draw lines, and it sounds like you agree with me on this, the state should not draw political lines based on race. They should not draw political lines to prevent blacks from getting elected, and they should not draw lines to guarantee that whites get elected, nor should they draw lines to prevent whites from getting elected or draw lines to guarantee that blacks get elected. It should be draw the lines based on not race at all. I mean, can we agree on that part?
We can agree on that if you will agree that, and it was 300 years. I was born in 1946. I lived in the Jim Crow era. It was just as bad. I'm telling you, I lived in Mississippi, brother, in the Jim Crow era, where I would be called the N-word in public. So you just don't know what you're talking about that.
Well, but you're talking about 1946 is not 300 years from when our nation was born. 1946 would be, you know, 150 years, 160 years. But you also said, I was addressing your statement that for 300 years, blacks had zero rights whatsoever. So, there's no doubt that in Alabama and in areas of the Jim Crow South, where the Democrats were making the kind of laws you're talking about, that the Democrats were evil, racist people. No doubt about it. And they did everything they could to keep blacks from having rights. But at that point, I don't think it's fair to say that blacks had no rights whatsoever. We didn't have slavery at that point, but we definitely had evil Jim Crow laws given to us by the Democrats. I agree with you on that. But it wasn't 300 years of our country doing that at that point. But to your point, let's get back to the main point, which is we don't think that election lines and where you vote should be based on race. Do we agree on that?
We should not have to do that. It should not be that way.
That's
but
right.
If I've been behind for whatever length of time that America's been a nation, and I was put behind by no fault of my own, how do I catch up?
Yeah, but what do you mean by that? I mean, we could pick out all kinds of groups and say that they've been behind, or that they were in a disadvantage 50 years ago, or even 10 years ago, or 100 years ago. How do you, by law, take any group that's ever been disadvantaged and suddenly make them equal? Isn't equality under the law to say that from this point forward, at whatever point you finally got it right and fixed it and made us a more perfect union, which we've had to do all the time and still need to do in some areas, from that point forward, we're going to judge each other equally based on the content of our character, not the color of our skin? Because we could say the same for the Jewish people. We could say the same for the Irish. We could say the same for, I mean, you could pick groups. I mean, the Jewish people were nearly white. Almost half of the Jewish people on the planet were murdered in 1940 and 41 and 42 and 43 and 45. And they came out of concentration camps. They had everything taken away from them. We don't say, okay, because you're Jewish, we're going to try to move you to the front of the line in order to somehow make this equal, any more than we should say, because you're Irish and you weren't allowed to shop in certain areas, or you weren't allowed to live in certain areas, or you were treated horribly, or the Chinese that were treated horribly in this nation whenever we had all the slave labor with them, we could take out so many examples. You can't draw your political lines today in terms of how people are elected based on injustices of yesterday.
But you're drawing a false conclusion. Nobody, there's nobody else. You name another group in America who was enslaved, had everything that they produced taken away from them, had no use of anything that they produced. It was actually illegal for blacks to get an education. And how do you compare that to what happened to the Jews, other people? I'm talking about what this country did to people.
Well, I think the comparison is worse for the Jews. They were murdered. but even if that wasn't true, even if we were only talking about slavery for blacks that were in slavery, right? How do you today say to how do you even determine whether or not someone with black skin was part of the slavery part of black America or part of the slave holding part of black America or even wasn't traced to that in America? In other words, what if a black person in America is a first generation American? They came here from wherever, England, Africa, wherever. They came from another nation and they happen to be black. You're going to treat them based on I don't even know how you connect. How would you even do that?
You can't do it that way. You do it the same way that the Swiss banks had to pay the Jews the money that the Germans held. Listen, you know when people come from another country, you know who descended from slavery. Why do we? That question always have to come up.
How do you know
who descended from slavery? You have a record of it.
So we have people right now in this country trying to do this, trying to do reparations, right? They're, San Francisco is trying to pay reparations. California is trying to pass a bill to pay reparations. They have no way of knowing who to pay. They're going to do it just based on the fact that your skin color is black. Well, what if your skin color
that's
is
wrong?
Yeah, it's wrong. But that's the only that's what they're doing. That's what I'm telling you. There is no way to do what you're talking about doing.
Right. There is a way to do it.
Let me ask you this. Even if you came from slaves, even if your ancestors were slaves 200 years ago, 400 years ago, 100 years ago, in some other country, a slave 100 years ago, or whatever, even then, how in the world do you guarantee whether or not someone is actually disadvantaged from that or advantaged from that? Because there are people that came out of slavery and did better in the marketplace because of just like tough times in life. You know how this works. And in James, we count it all joy when we experience trials. Why? Because God uses those to make us perfect and complete. And so some people actually came out of that and it drove them to become even more productive and do better in life. And for some people, it destroyed them, just like white people that came out of horrible situations. I mean, how in the world do you determine? How do you take money from a white person today that had nothing to do with slavery 400 years ago and give that money to someone who had nothing to do with slavery 400 years ago, even if they can trace it to their ancestors? How is that just?
But why do you make those false arguments? That's not what we're talking about. And let me explain this to you. This is, you like to talk about God. Well, let me tell you what God did. When the children of Israel was in Egypt, God said to them, the night of the Passover, I want you to go to the Egyptians and ask them for their silver and their gold and their raiment, their clothes. And this, then he continued to say, because I don't want you to have to enter into the new country empty-handed. That's scripture, brother.
Okay, based on our conversation.
Whatever you try to deny, I'm telling you, God saw it.
Okay, for your comparison to work, though, let's be honest, for your comparison to work, we would have to be having this conversation in 1865. We would have to be having the conversation about taking money from the very people that had actually just been engaged in slavery and giving that money to the people that had just been enslaved, something I would probably have supported in 1865, and in many ways, and not good enough, obviously, but in some ways, there was some compensation for former slaves. But today, you can't do that today. There's no way to do that today. You're suggesting that Jews should right now, today, go to Egypt and take all the money from anyone in Egypt, or that blacks that live in America today that can trace their ancestry to slavery should be able to go raid the homes and take the all of the goods of anyone in America today that somehow six generations ago might have somebody in their family might have been involved in slavery. Is that really what you're saying would be biblically just?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, and this is what I really believe, God says if my people that are called by my name would humble themselves and pray, seek my face, turn from...
I lost you. You there? What was his name again, Bobby? Norman, thank you for calling in. I've got 60 seconds left. I don't think that's why I lost you, but your phone cut out. I really appreciate your call, man. And I hear your heart. And on that last part, I know we absolutely agree. And the way to humble ourselves, to turn from our wicked ways, is not to cause more division. It is not to judge each other based on color of skin. It is not to judge each other based on our past. It is to treat each other as MLK said we should, and that is based on our content of our character, on our behavior, and the things that we actually do. That's the only way our land is going to be healed. That's the only way the racial relations are going to... That's how they were being healed, right? I mean, we had such good improvement in racial relationships in this country from the time that you're talking about when you were born in the 1940s and the stuff you went through in the 1960s. You cannot tell me that it wasn't better 5 years ago than it was in the 1960s. Nor can you tell me that it wasn't better 5 years ago than it is right now. What changed? What changed was we stopped judging each other based on color of skin and started judging each other based on content of the character, and it got better and better and better year after year after year after year until 3 years ago, almost to the day right now, when all of a sudden, because of that horrible incident with George Floyd, all of a sudden you had all this cultural Marxism that had been poured into the kids in this country come pouring out with the idea that we should have reparations and that we should judge each other based on color of skin, and that we should march in the streets and burn cities based on a lie about systemic racism that does not exist in this country anymore. Does racism exist? Absolutely. There's still racism. From all races towards all races, there's somebody that's an absolute jerk and a racist. No doubt about it. Blacks that are, whites that are, every color you can imagine. But systemic racism is what we got rid of by taking it out of our laws and not allowing it. And now people want to put it back in our laws, like the Supreme Court yesterday and the day before. Anyway, great call, Norman. Appreciate you calling in. Maybe we can connect again tomorrow. And out of time for today, folks. So be sure and listen again tomorrow. Be with you the rest of the week. This is At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow afternoon at the same time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.